morning, U.S. versus Curry.
Todd Schultz, Assistant Federal.
You're familiar, Mr. Schultz.
May it please the court, counsel for the government. The district court in this case abused its discretion in sentencing the defendant to 188 months in the Bureau of Prisons. It gave too much weight to the career offender guidelines, which is not the product of empirical study. And giving it such great weight, it effectively treated it as the range as being presumptively reasonable. The district court was not required to vary this from this guideline, but it cannot ignore the fact that this guideline is not based on empirical study when it engages in the weighing of the factors under 3553A. A guideline which is based on empirical data can reflect a rough approximation of a sentence that might achieve the 3553A objectives. The same cannot be said of a guideline which is not based on empirical data. Here, the district court abused its discretion because it simply attributed too much weight to the recommended career offender guideline sentence. It essentially attributed the same weight to the career offender guideline that it would attribute to a guideline which is based on empirical study. This heavy reliance was beyond the bounds of reason. Had the court not given such substantial weight to the guideline advisory sentence, it could have found a lesser range to be sufficient in looking to the other factors. At the sentencing hearing, the district court began, as it always does, by acknowledging that the guidelines are a starting point and that they are simply an initial benchmark. The court went on to say that it is prohibited by law from presuming the reasonableness of a guideline sentence and that it would not do so. We are not suggesting that the district court doesn't understand that the guidelines are advisory, but these aren't magic words that the court says. And practically speaking, when you look at the court's reasoning, it becomes clear that it improperly presumed the guidelines, perhaps not consciously, but it improperly presumed the guidelines to be reasonable. And the handful of references to the advisory nature of the guidelines and the fact that the court understands it has discretion to vary can't fully inoculate the district court from a challenge that it improperly presumed the guidelines to be reasonable. And I believe that this court's case in Schmidt says as much. When the court looks at the record and analyzes this court's weighing of the 3553A factors, I believe it is notable how permeated the court's analysis of the other factors is with references to the career offender guideline. It is clear that the district court was viewing all the other factors through the flawed lens of the career offender guideline. It's as if the court, after having properly calculated the guidelines, is going through the statutory factors simply to justify the guideline sentence it has already decided to give. With respect to the statutory factors that the court addressed, it began by looking at the nature and circumstances of this particular offense. It noted that this is a serious offense, as are seemingly all offenses in federal court. Undisputedly and inarguably, this is a serious offense. I do think it is noteworthy that Kimbrough, another crack case which involved more egregious facts than were present in this case, in Kimbrough the defendant had a handgun, the Supreme Court described the nature and circumstances of that offense as an unremarkable drug trafficking offense. With respect to the defendant's history and characteristic, moving on to that factor, the court acknowledged that was the bulk of what was at issue in the sentencing hearing. And as it began its analysis or its weighing of this factor, it stated that the career offender statute and the direction to the sentencing commission is not at all ambiguous, and that it did not have to look behind the words of the statute for the legislative intent. The remarks by the court on this particular point suggest that the court is viewing 28 U.S.C. 994H as a directive not only to the sentencing commission, but as a directive to it. And so when you look at what 994H requires, it requires that the sentencing commission set guidelines at or near the maximum for certain groups of offenders, not that the district court would sentence at or near the maximum. And I think when you look at the court's wordings and you take into account the weight the court gives the guidelines, it appears that the court is treating the career offender guideline as if it were a statute, and that it like the judge in the Schmidt case, saw some kind of outside constraint on his discretion that perhaps he felt he could not set aside. In talking specifically about Mr. Curry's criminal history, you can see that the career offender guideline is looming in the background because the court repeatedly refers to him as a career offender. Mr. Curry is clearly a career offender. There's no question he has earned the career offender status. He's just the kind of person the career offender status is meant to apply to. Despite the court's characterization as his criminal history was extraordinary, he in fact had a total of 8 criminal history points, which would ordinarily place him in Category 4. He had 1 prior violent offense for which he was convicted in state court under an accountability theory, and he had a single prior drug offense. Absent the career offender guideline, he would be looking at a 30 to 37-month sentence. With respect, the court then moved on and addressed the need for the sentence imposed to reflect the seriousness of the offense, promote respect for the law, and to provide just punishment for the offense. And in its brief discussion of this factor, it noted that part and parcel of this factor was the seriousness of the offense and Mr. Curry's history and characteristics. It's clear that the career offender mentality is pervading the court's analysis of this particular factor. And the court notes also under this factor that it couldn't accept the defendant's version or revision of his criminal history. And the court is referring to the defendant's comments in allocution that he was convicted under an accountability theory. And while it is not clear from the pre-sentence report itself, the defendant wasn't revising history. He was, in fact, advising the court of the reality that in his state court violent offense, he was convicted under an accountability theory for just what he says, essentially, which was taking someone to the scene of a shooting and then driving that person back away from it. Finally, the court moved on to address the need for adequate deterrence to criminal conduct and to protect the public from further crimes. The court again reverts back to the guideline and states that the only sentence that is appropriate is a sentence called for the application of the career offender status within the guidelines. Even if this court were to conclude that a career offender guideline provided a fair approximation of a sentence that would satisfy the goals of sentencing set forth in Section 3553A in a mine-run case, this court's decision to sentence within that range was still beyond the bounds of reason because this defendant's criminal history is not the type contemplated by Congress. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time, and I'll reserve the remainder of my argument.
Let me ask you. This guy, 38 years old, convicted 9 times, arrested 8 other times. Charges were not filed. And he's still not a career offender?
Your Honor, I understand that the courts probably view this differently than I might as an assistant public defender, but when the court says he was convicted 9 times, I believe 4 of those are minor traffic offenses, and 1 is a misdemeanor. He had a conviction for forgery, I think, almost 20 years ago, and he has a unlawful use of a weapon. And so I understand the court's points. I think when you make a reference like that, it does sound horrible, but it is, I think, important to actually look at what those are for. And I think the 4 traffic offenses and the 1 misdemeanor, I believe, occurred when he was 21 years old. So I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Norwood?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is George Norwood. The district court knew it had discretion to either sentence the defendant within the guideline range, above the guideline range, or below the guideline range. The district court said so several times. There is, how much more can the district court do other than say, I know I have the discretion, I really mean it, I actually know it. The judge knew it. The judge went through all the sentencing factors at length, as this court requires, and sentence the defendant at the low end of the guideline, which this court must presume is reasonable. With respect to the judge's comment about the defendant rewriting history, I believe the pre-sentence report indicates that the defendant was convicted of aggravated discharge of a firearm where he shot somebody in the leg. There were no objections to the pre-sentence report. Then when the defendant allocuted, he said, I really didn't do it, somebody else did it. And that's what, when Chief Judge Herndon said, the defendant's attempting to rewrite history at this point. If there are no further questions from the court.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
In closing, would just briefly want to address the issue of the defendant's one prior violent felony. Defendant, there's no dispute that he was convicted of a violent felony, but what it appears the government and the district court misunderstand is that he was convicted of that violent felony under an accountability theory. So that when he says he didn't shoot anyone, that is true, and it's not him denying that he has the conviction. But it is an important distinction, particularly when we're talking about the reasonableness of sentencing him within the career offender
guideline. Was that point made ahead of the sentencing?
The point that he was convicted under an accountability theory?
As an aider and abettor?
Your Honor, I don't believe that was, other than the defendant making that point in his allocution, it was not brought up.
That's kind of a problem for you.
I mean,
if that's what you're hanging your hat on here, then it was defense counsel's obligation to make that point in advance of sentencing in response to the PSR and argue it.
Well, Your
right?
Honor, that's not what we're hanging our hat on. That's an alternate theory. The main theory that we're hanging our hat on here today is that the court deferred, essentially presumed the career offender guideline to be reasonable. And based upon that, we're asking that the court would vacate and remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move to the 7th.